Welcome everyone for this Saturday evening for Bhakti Vriksha program. We'll start with invocation prayers. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Dinamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Namo Mahavidanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaurahatshe Namaha Panchatattvatmakam Krishnam Bhaktarupa Swarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakhyam Namami Bhakta Shaktikam He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Okay. So, which verses did we cover last time? 251. Yeah, so we covered up to 251. 2.51. We started from 244. Through 251. So as a recap, so what Krishna is speaking now, after giving him Arjuna knowledge about the Karam Kanda, do with the desire of result, at least if you want results, so work with that consciousness, but do your duty by following the principles. Then Krishna took it further step, do just as a matter of duty without the consideration of result. And we did the famous verse 247. Karmanneva adhikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana ma karma phala heturbhur mate sango astava karmane. So we discussed that verse in detail. To 48 onwards, now Krishna is speaking about, again and again Krishna is talking about buddhi yoga. Work with intelligence, with transcendental consciousness. So in 50 and 51, Krishna spoke about the result working with transcendental consciousness, working with buddhi yoga. So in 49, Krishna says, Duren hai avaram karma. Keep this abominable activities far away. Buddhi yoga and dhananjaya. By buddhi yoga, by acting in transcendental consciousness, keep these abominable activities far away. So what is Krishna speaking about this abominable activity here? See, everybody speaks and understands from their point of view, right? So Krishna is the speaker and Arjuna is the audience, and we all are the audience. So Krishna is speaking from his point of view. Krishna is speaking from transcendental point of view. And from him, from his point of view, avaram karma, the abominable activity. What is the abominable activity? This karma kanda. That don't get entangled with this karma kanda, because this is binding. Even though it's following the Vedic principles, following the karma kanda, Vedas, but the ultimate result is binding. And from Arjuna's point of view, what Arjuna is thinking, for him, what is abominable activity? killing the relatives, fighting in this war. So from his point of view, he is thinking, if I engage in this war, that is abominable. But I have to kill all my friends and relatives, so that will be abominable activity. So Krishna is speaking from his point of view, Arjuna is thinking from his point of view, his mind. So generally what happens, so when we are listening to a lecture, everybody has that experience. Okay? When we used to go to school, college, so teacher is speaking, he gives 1 hour class, and how much we understand? Maybe 20%. Right? So we get maybe 20% out of 1 hour, maybe 10-15 minutes worth, we really kind of maintain at the end of class. The same way when we listen from Bhagavad Gita also, when we have discourses going on Bhagavad Gita, at the end of the session, what we retain is maybe only 10-15%, 20%. Right? And most of the time what happens is, during that listening session, our mind gets stuck on some point, either to the point with which we completely agree, or sometime to the point with which we completely disagree. So we get stuck with that, and our consciousness, our mind is going on that point. Speaker is speaking something else after that, but we get stuck on that point, either to something we really agree or to something we really disagree. So we are doing all interpretations, permutation, combination about that point, isn't it? Anybody has that experience, realization? See, a lot of time it happens at the end of the class, somebody will ask question which the speaker started in the beginning of the class, because they just got stuck at that point. So here Arjuna is still thinking, what is this abominable activity? And what is this Buddhi Yoga? So we'll briefly discuss 52-53. And then 54 onwards is the fourth phase of this chapter 2. We said chapter 2 is four divisions of the chapter. First part is surrender of Arjuna, accepting Krishna as the Guru. And then second part is identity. Krishna gives the real identity, who we are. So 12 to 30 is knowledge of soul. Then 31 to 53 is about two duties. Swadharma and Sanatan Dharma. Following our duties based on Varnashram Dharma, based on our occupational principle, and following the duty based on our real identity at the level of Sanatan Dharma, our real relationship with Krishna.
यदाते मोह कलिलं बुद्धिर व्याति आशिति तदागन्तासि निर्वेदं श्रोतव्यस्य श्रुतस्य च.
So maybe everybody can recite. यदाते मोह कलिलं
बुद्धिर व्याति तरिष्यति तदागन्तासि निर्वेदम् श्रोतव्यस्य श्रुतस्य च.
When your intelligence has passed out of the dense forest of delusion, you shall become indifferent to all that has been heard and all that has to be heard. Okay, so I will read 53 also, then we'll discuss both together.
Shruti viparita pannate yada sahasrasi nishchala samadhavachala buddhista tadayogam avapsyasi.
When your mind is no longer disturbed by the flowery language of the Vedas, and when it remains fixed in the trance of self-realization, then you will have attained the divine consciousness. So these two verses, Krishna is kind of summing up what he has told about all karma kanda. And in the previous verse, Krishna said the Vedas, it's like the flowery words, Pushpitam Vacham. Right? So the knowledge of Vedas or the Karmakanda principles given in the Vedas is like the flowery words. They entangle the person. And so here what Krishna is saying, when your intelligence has passed out of the dense forest, Moha Kalilam. So Moha is illusion. And Kalilam is the dense forest. So when your intelligence has passed out the illusion of this dense forest, then you shall become indifferent to what all has been heard and what all that yet to be heard. So what really Krishna is speaking about here? If you just read this verse standalone, just this verse, what will you understand?
The similar thing that you talked about, like if you are in an illusion, like whether you agree or disagree, like you just get stuck there, right?
So if somebody gets stuck with all these Vedic Karmakanda principles, he is completely bewildered. Oh, I should do this, I should do that, I should follow this yajna, I should do this ritual, that ritual. So whole thing, our whole consciousness is completely stuck in that. We cannot think beyond that. So when Krishna says, when your intelligence has passed out this dense forest of Karmakanda, then there is nothing else to be heard and you become indifferent to what all you have heard. So we have heard of so many rituals, right? We have seen people do so many rituals. We have heard of so many rituals. So you will become different to all that, indifferent to all that. How? By following the principles of Buddhi Yoga, by understanding the higher principle. That rather than following all these ritualistic principles, there is something higher than that. And that higher is to ultimately surrender to the Supreme Lord. Follow the principles of Buddhi Yoga. In a beginning stage, Buddhi Yoga is referred as Karma Yoga. In ultimate sense, Buddhi Yoga is Bhakti Yoga. So following the principles of Bhakti Yoga, surrendering to the Supreme Lord, there is no need of following all those such ritualistic process. So you can become indifferent to all what you have heard of this Karmakanda ritualistic principle. So how is that? We have heard so many principles and sometimes people think, oh, I have to do yoga. Sometimes people think I have to do some dhyana. I have to do some Karmakanda. I have to do some yajna, perform some yajnas. So all these various things are there. But if we understand the conclusion of the Vedas, then we can understand what is the real essence of all these activities. And all these activities are mentioned based on different yugas. So every yuga has a certain process of self-realization. In Satya Yuga, the process of self-realization was meditation, dhyana. Because in Satya Yuga, the duration of life is much longer. And people had the capacity to perform that kind of austerities. In Treta Yuga, the process of self-realization is performing elaborate yajnas. Like people used to do Ashwamedha Yajna, Rajasuya Yajna. So all those big elaborate yajnas, that's the process of self-realization. In Dwapar Yuga, elaborate temple worship, the deity worship, giving gifts and charity. So that was the process of self-realization. Now if somebody thinks, oh, I have heard about all these processes, okay, so I have to do that. But in Kali Yuga, those processes are not possible. Because we don't have, our life duration is so small in Kali Yuga. What is the average life duration?
70.
Maybe 70 years now. In the beginning of Kali Yuga, it was maybe 100, 125 years. Now the average is about 70 years. And as the time passes, it's getting lower and lower, right? Decreasing. So life duration is so small, it's not possible to do the severe austerities, dhyana, because it takes years and years. In Satya Yuga, people will do dhyana for thousands of years. And then in Kali Yuga, can we perform big fire sacrifices? Like Rasuya Yajna, Ashwamedha Yajna? Why not? So to perform those yajnas, it needs capable brahmanas, who can recite all those mantras perfectly. Now it's very hard to find qualified brahmanas, pure brahmanas. And even if you find somebody, somebody will not know all those mantras, recite it properly, with proper pronunciation. And then the ingredients for the yajna, you need pure ghee, pure ingredients. It's very hard to find all those pure ingredients. Can we get pure ghee? It's not even possible to find the pure desi cow, right, from which you make the pure desi ghee and butter. So in Kali Yuga, it's not even possible to perform those elaborate fire sacrifices. Yes, we do a little bit here and there, just for our satisfaction sometime. But that's not the recommended process for Kali Yuga. And then the elaborate deity worship. Yes, the deity worship process is there now also to some extent. But to the extent it was used to be in Dwapara Yuga, like following the whole standards of deity worship from morning till evening, offering the bhoga with such purity. So that's not possible. But deity worship is maintained because it's for our purity. So in temple still, deity worship is maintained to some extent. Now, so what is the process for self-realization in Kali Yuga? Chanting of the holy name. Kalau tad hari kirtanad. So in Kali Yuga, the process of self-realization is the chanting process. So the Vedas mention all these in a briefly in some part of the Vedas. Right? In most part, it speaks about all those karmakanda processes that you should do this ritual, this yajna, that ceremony. So if somebody gets stuck with all that, he will be completely illusioned, bewildered. So Krishna is saying, when you understand the real purpose of the Vedas, the essence of the Vedas, then you can come out of that dark forest of illusion. And you become indifferent to what all you have heard. That, okay, I don't need to worry about all that. Even somebody, if somebody is situated at a pure devotional level, shuddha devotional level, he even doesn't care about all these various ritualistic activity. Like there are some activity mentioned as taking bath 3 times, doing certain purificatory acts. So if somebody is situated at pure devotional level, he even doesn't worry about all that. So in purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions about Sri Madhvendra Puri. Madhvendra Puri was a great devotee, a pure devotee who found the deity of Gopalji in Govardhan area in Vrindavan. So he mentions that I offer my prayers to, oh my prayers 3 times a day, all glories to you. Oh bathing, I offer my obeisances unto you. Oh demigods, oh forefathers, please excuse me for my inability to offer you my respect. Now wherever I sit, I can remember the great descendants of Yadu dynasty, Krishna, the enemy of Kansa, and thereby I can free myself from all sinful bondage. I think this is sufficient for me. So what are you saying? I don't care about all these rituals for purificatory act, paying obeisances to the forefathers, paying obeisances to the demigods. All the time I'm remembering Krishna. And by just chanting the name of Krishna, remembering Krishna, that is sufficient. There is no need to do all other separate things. Because when you want to nourish a tree, you pour the water at the roots of the tree. And when you pour the water at roots, the whole tree gets nourished. There is no need to separately water each leaf, branch, twig of the tree. The whole tree is nourished by putting water at the roots. So same way, when we surrender to Krishna, when we remember Krishna, chant the holy name of Krishna, there is no separate need to follow all those karmakanda rituals. Because Krishna, he provides everything. He takes care of everything. So when your mind is no longer disturbed by the flowery language of Vedas and it remains fixed in the trance of self-realization, then you will have attained the divine consciousness. So Krishna is summarizing the concept of Buddhi Yoga here. Now here Arjuna is again and again hearing the word Buddhi Yoga. So Buddhista Yogama Vapasyasi. And in previous verse also Krishna says Buddhir Vyati Ashrityaha. So in last few verses, Krishna is speaking continuously about buddhi yoga. And Arjuna is thinking, what is the abominable activity I have to get rid of? So he's thinking, who is such transcendentalist person? Right? Will he be fighting or will he not fight? Because he wants to understand for himself. What should I do? Should I be fighting or not fighting? So if such transcendentalist person is there, established in transcendental consciousness, what will he do? Will he fight or not fight? If he was in such situation. So now next, that is how Arjuna's question comes. So 54, Arjuna asks a question to Krishna to clear his doubt or to understand better. And then the rest of the chapter, Krishna answers this question of Arjuna. So in this one verse, Arjuna asks four questions. So Arjuna uvacha, sita pragyasya ka bhasha, samadhi sthyasya kaishava, sita dhira kim prabhasheta, kimasita vrajeta kim. So Arjuna said, O Krishna, what are the symptoms of one whose consciousness is thus merged in transcendence? Samadhi sthya keshava. So what are the symptoms of one situated in transcendence? So that is first question. And then he asked, sthitadhi kim? How does he speak? Kim prabhashet, kim asit, vrajet kim. So these are the three questions. So kim prabhashet, how does he speak? Kim asit, how does he sit? Vrajet kim, how does he walk? So now this question, it has both external meaning and internal meaning. So when Arjuna is asking what are the symptoms of somebody situated in transcendence, and specifically he wants to ask how does he speak. So yes, of course he wants to know how does he speak. But external speech as well as our internal speech. So every time we have speak going on externally and internally. Even if you are not speaking externally, your mind is speaking. Right? So how does he speak is externally, how does he speak? And internally, how is his consciousness? How is his behavior or his reaction to certain situation? If somebody blasphemes him, or somebody insults him, somebody puts him in this kind of situation where in which Arjuna is right now, disrespect him. So what will be his reaction? What will he do? How will he react? And then kim asit, how does he sit? So does Arjuna really want to know how does that person sits? So maybe yes, he wants to know how does he sit. But the internal meaning of that is, when we sit basically, what are you doing is you are restricting your senses. So the internal, the real question is, how does such person restrict his senses to engage in sense objects? And then vrajeta kim, how does he walk? So externally, how does he walk? Okay, external question. But internally, what is the meaning internally? How does he walk means how he engages his senses. So the real question is, how does he speak means what is his reaction to certain uncomfortable situations. How does he sit means how does he restrict his senses. And how does he walk means how does he engages his senses. So Arjuna asked these four questions. Now Krishna is going to answer these questions in the next verses. Shri Bhagavan uvacha, prajahati yada karma kaman, sarvan partha manogatan, atmani evatmana tushta, stita pragyasta dochyate. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O Partha, when a man gives up all variety of desire for sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction, and when his mind, thus purified, finds satisfaction in the self alone, then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. So, very important person. Here, what Krishna is answering as a overall, what are the symptoms of a transcendentalist? So, what Krishna is saying, when a man gives up all variety of desires for sense gratification and his mind is purified, he finds satisfaction in the self alone. Then he is situated in transcendence. Now, we know all of us has so many desires, right? Everybody is full of desires for enjoyment. Now, to be situated in transcendence, Krishna says, when somebody gives up all the desires for sense enjoyment. So what is the ultimate desire actually everybody has? To be happy. Perfect answer. So ultimate desire, everybody want to be happy. That is the ultimate desire, and find happiness in different things. Right? So now, to be free from desire means it's not even looking for happiness. Give up the desire for being happy, looking for happiness. Now, can that be possible? So everybody want to be happy. That is actually the soul's intrinsic quality. Everybody want satisfaction, happiness. So what Krishna specifically says here, not when somebody gives up all desires. Krishna says, when somebody gives up all desire for sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction. Because the problem is, looking for happiness is not the problem. When we hear our mind, which our mind is proposing, that you will find happiness this way, that way, and we try to get happiness as per the dictations of mind, that is the problem. Because our mind is always bombarding with various thoughts. Try doing that. This way you will get happiness. Try doing this. This way you will get happiness. See, we can be satisfied with regular dal roti also. Right? You can be perfectly satisfied by eating simple dal roti. But what is our mind proposing? Look for gulab jamun, rasgulla, pizza, burger, this, that. So mind is proposing, this is the way you will find happiness. Go to this restaurant, try that food, then you will be happy. Go to that mall. Even if you cannot do shopping, do window shopping, then you will be happy. Go to this movie theater, watch this movie, then you will be happy. So mind is always proposing various things. So not being disturbed by the mind, how the mind is proposing various thoughts, various actions. So giving up the desires or the desires for enjoyment as per the dictations of mind. So that is what Krishna is saying. But ultimately everybody wants happiness. So giving up the desire for happiness arising from mental concoction. But then where to find happiness? So Krishna gives in the second part of the verse. When the mind becomes purified, so thus giving up the proposals of mind, purify your mind and find satisfaction in self alone. So find satisfaction within yourself. So that is how you can become perfectly satisfied. And this is how you can become situated in transcendence. Now, so everybody actually internally, all the happiness is within us. It's all within your thought process. We can be satisfied, as I said, we can be satisfied with some all simple thing. But we are always looking at external happiness. If I do this externally, then I will become happy. So, in scriptures, there is a wonderful example of Kasturi Mrig. Anybody heard of Kasturi Mrig? Musk deer. You know musk deer? So what is musk deer? So the Kasturi Mrig, actually he, when some secretion of chemicals happen within the body from his navel, very nice fragrance is coming out, right? Musk smell, musk fragrance. So this smell is coming out, but this deer is completely bewildered from where this fragrance is coming. he is not able to understand this is coming from within me itself. So he is getting this fragrance and deer is thinking, from where is it coming? He is searching everywhere external to find the source of that fragrance. So he's running everywhere, here and there. Ultimately, he ends up in a deserted land. So without water, without anything, he finally dies. So he is trying to find externally, but actually it exists internally. So same way, the real happiness lies within us. But we are always seeking for happiness outside. So how happiness is within us? Within the soul. The soul is, what is the characteristic of the soul? Satchidananda. The soul is full of bliss. We just need to establish ourselves in that pure consciousness. So, for example, if somebody is alone at home, so rather than being satisfied with himself, engaging with his own things, we're thinking, oh, if person keep thinking always, oh, I'm alone, I need to find somebody, right? So that person is always in anxiety or distressed or not happy in that situation. But if the person remains satisfied within himself, with his own activities, he can be perfect, completely engaged with his various things. So that is how we can be self-situated. So the whole fourth phase of this chapter, starting from text 54 till end, the fourth phase of this chapter is referred as Atmaram. So we did the acronym Gita. So G stands for Guru. First part where Arjuna surrenders to Krishna, accepts him as Guru. Second part is I, identity. Krishna gives the knowledge of our real identity. The third part is GIT. T means two duties. Swadharma and Sanatana Dharma. Now next part, the fourth phase of the chapter, starting from text 50 onwards, is A. So A is Atmaram. And the way what Krishna is saying as Stith Pragya. So Stith Pragya is who is situated in transcendence, in Samadhi. So Krishna is saying, give up the concoctions of mind, purify your mind and be satisfied in the self. In this way, you can be situated in transcendence. So the next part, Krishna further describing the symptoms of a transcendentalist. Krishna says, Dukheshu anudvigmanamana Sukheshu vigtahaspraha Bhitrag bhaya krodaha Sthitadhir muniruchyate Dukheshu anadvignamana Sukheshu vigtahaspraha Bhitrag bhaya krodaha Sthitadhir muniruchyate. One who is not disturbed in mind, even amidst the threefold miseries, or elated when there is happiness, and who is free from attachment, fear and anger, is called a sage of steady mind. So this is further Krishna is giving. So still answering to the first question of Arjuna, which is, what are the symptoms of a transcendentalist? What are the symptoms of a sthitadhir? So what are the symptoms here? Krishna saying, who is not disturbed even when he is in a miserable situation, and who is not elated when there is happiness, and who is free from attachment, fear and anger. Bhit rag bhaya krodha. So rag bhaya krodha. Rag means attachment, bhaya means fear, krodha means anger. So who is not attached to these things. He is situated in transcendence. He is a sage of steady mind. Now, in our situation, what happens? It's completely opposite, right? When there is misery,
we get scared.
We get disturbed. And when there is happiness, we get so much excited. So Krishna is saying completely opposite. So he is not disturbed in misery, and who is not excited in happiness, who stays calm in both situations, and who is not attached to anger, fear or attachments. Now, how we can become free from misery or not be disturbed in misery?
Staying calm.
How?
Control, self-control.
How? This is all theoretical, but how? How really we do it?
Just pray to Lord.
So coming to that point now, right? So if we are focusing on Krishna, if somebody is surrendered to Krishna, and in that situation, even if some miserable situation comes, what a devotee thinks is, this is Krishna's mercy, he minimized my problem. Otherwise, I may have a bigger problem, but because of Krishna's mercy, the problem is minimized. And same way, when there is happiness, when we achieve something, the devotee thinks, this is all because of Krishna's mercy. I am nothing. I achieved this because of Krishna's mercy. So what is the difference in a materialist and a spiritualist person? What is the difference in materialist and a devotee? It's a completely opposite. When I'm misery, what materialists think? Why I? Why me? Right? Why I am suffering? And when there is happiness, materialists will think, I did it. I deserve it. Right? I am so intelligent. So on the contrary, the devotee, he thinks when it's a misery, I deserve much bigger than this problem. Because of my wrong deeds. But because of Krishna's mercy, my problem is minimized. I may have got my finger cut, but I got just a small cut. Right? So that is, and this Krishna is doing this for my purification. So that is what a devotee thinks. And when there is some achievement, it's because of Krishna. I have no intelligence, I have no strength. Just because of Krishna, I got all this. So there is a very famous song actually, bhajan. Karte ho tum kanhaiya, mera naam ho raha hai. So what is saying? Karte ho tum kanhaiya. When somebody achieves something, what he is saying? He is giving the credit to Krishna. Karte ho tum kanhaiya, mera naam ho raha hai. I'm just getting this glorification, this achievement. But you are the real doer. You are making it happen. And what are the other characteristics Krishna is mentioning? Free from bhitraga bhaya krodha. Free from attachment, fear and anger. In a materialist situation, what happens when you don't get what you want?
You'll go mad.
Get completely angry.
Exactly.
Why it did not happen? I want it this way. Right? And then there is always fear of losing something. And there is so much attachment to the things. So a devotee, if somebody takes shelter of Krishna, he can be free from these things. If somebody doesn't happen the way we want, again, Krishna did not want me to get this thing. So one can stay free from all these attachments, fear and anger. And there is no fear also of losing something. Generally what happens, if there is an exam, so somebody studied very hard, exam time, somebody may be very fearful. What will happen? What will happen? What will happen? Will I pass or not? Right? Happens? So generally we are very fearful of the end result. But if somebody is surrendered to Krishna or take shelter of Krishna, he can stay free from all this fear and anxiety. Ultimately, it's all in Krishna's hand. Let me do my endeavor to best of my ability. So not being attached in that way, not being fearful in that way. And if you don't get the result, not getting angry also in that way. Because here, this is Krishna's will. Whatever happens, it's Krishna's will ultimately. So for the first part, not being disturbed in the misery or not being elated in happiness. This is a wonderful pastime. when Abhimanyu was killed in Mahabharata war, so Arjuna took a vow. So in that situation, what was he? He was disturbed in that miserable situation, even after hearing Bhagavad Gita, right? Because Krishna is putting him in that situation to demonstrate a point. So in Arjuna's situation, he was bewildered and he took a vow. What was the vow?
He will kill Jayadrath.
Before sunset, I will kill Jayadrath. Because he did not have the help reach Abhimanyu. So if I am not able to kill Jayadrath by sunset, I will put myself in fire. I will take fire samadhi, Agni samadhi. So when Duryodhan heard this, he was excited. We will protect Jayadrath for the whole day and then Abhimanyu will kill himself. So the next day, they put a great defense. We put Jayadrath at the back end and the whole army protecting Jayadrath. So the whole day, Arjuna is struggling to reach up to Jayadrath. But Jayadrath is like at the far end and all his warriors are there in front to fight with Arjuna to protect Jayadrath. So now Krishna played a trick that time. What did Krishna do? Krishna says, I control this nature, right? The whole nature is under Krishna's control. So he made the sunset. So as soon as the sunset, there was the second part of this. Elated in happiness. When there is, you get excited in happiness. So Jayadrath, the whole Duryodhana army was so happy. So Arjuna did not have to go to find Jayadrath. Jayadrath came in the front dancing. He was so excited, so happy. Oh, you couldn't kill me, you couldn't kill me. And now you will put yourself in fire. Agni Samadhi. So Jayadrath himself came in the front with happiness. So at that time, Krishna again have the sun come out and Arjuna shoot Jayadrath. So this is a perfect example, right? Not being disturbed when there is some misery and not being elated when happiness. We should always remember this distress also is temporary, right? This miserable situation also is temporary and this happiness also is temporary. Generally, when there is little happiness, we get so excited and we start doing all nonsense things. Isn't it? Somebody get little something, let's go have party. And spend so much money on all nonsense waste things. And when there is a disturbance, even there is so much of things to enjoy, one is crying. Just because of some small thing one may not have got. So, who can be situated in transcendence? Krishna is giving the recipe here. Don't be disturbed when there is some little problem in your life. Don't get so excited when there is little happiness. Be free from attachment, fear and anger. And such person is situated in transcendence. So next, moving on to next. Now Krishna answers his next question. How does such person speak? So externally, so speech is very important. Isn't it? Why speech is important? Okay, so everybody cannot give lecture. Okay, that is one thing. But the way we speak is also very important. So let's recite the verse and then we'll discuss.
यह सर्वत्र अनेभिष्टेश्चः तत्तत् प्राप्य शुभाशुभ नाभिनन्दति नाद्वेष्यति तस्य प्रज्ञा प्रतिष्ठितः.
In the material world, one who is unaffected by whatever good or evil he may attain, neither praising nor despising it, is firmly fixed in perfect knowledge. So one who is unaffected by whatever good or evil he may obtain, neither praising it nor despising it, firmly fixed in perfect knowledge. So this is answering to his question of how does he speak. Because generally our speech depends on our emotions. So when somebody insults you, what happens?
You get angry.
Start shouting back. Right? If somebody blasphemes you or says something, passes a bad comment on you, we immediately get upset and say something bad back. And when somebody praises us, what happens?
We feel happy.
And yeah, you are right. We start glorifying ourselves also sometime. Or we may try to glorify the other person. Right? Which may not be really true. So, our speech is determined by our emotions. If we are sad, our speech is determined by that. If we are happy, we speak in a different way. So, Asthita Dhira, how does he speak? He is not affected by these things. Even if he gets something bad or good, he is not affected by that. Neither praising it nor despising it. So, if we have to, generally everybody likes to speak. Right? Everybody wants to speak. And if somebody starts speaking, they don't want to stop. It can keep going on and on. But in this Kali Yuga, another problem is, even if somebody is a foolish person, but in Kali Yuga it's hard to identify that person. Because everybody is so nicely dressed. So somebody may be completely rascal number one, fool number one, but he is dressed in nice suit boot. And people think, oh, he is such a posh person, high profile person. So how to identify a fool? A fool is identified as soon as he opens his mouth. So even if somebody is nicely dressed, but as soon as he opens his mouth, we can really see who he is, right? Where he stands. So that's why Prabhu said, to identify a fool is, just listen to what he says. There may be many people who poses themselves as transcendentalists, spiritual personalities, spiritual gurus. In Kali Yuga, there are many like that. In abundance, such pretending gurus. How we identify if somebody is a real bona fide spiritual person or he is just a nonsense person? Just listen to what he says. So as soon as we listen to them, even if we ourselves have little knowledge, even if you have little knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, you can understand where he is, where the other person is situated. But the problem in Kali Yuga is because people are so confused and bewildered, they accept everybody. Oh, he is such a Mahatma, such a spiritual person. And people go in thousands and thousands to such Dhongi Babas. Because people want shortcut. That is the whole problem. Rather than looking for the real knowledge to engage in the real process of devotional service, people in general, they want shortcut. And if somebody tells, yeah, I will just give you one mantra or one this thing. You do this and keep doing all other things, whatever you are doing. Just do one thing, add this one thing. And you can attain perfection. So people want shortcut. They get attracted. Yeah, I will do that. So there is one Baba. Say, oh, you keep doing all whatever you are doing. You can keep drinking. You can keep eating all that nonsense. Just come to my ashram and give some dakshina. So kaam ho jayega tumhara. So there is something like that. People want shortcut and they get bewildered by these pretending spiritualists. So Krishna is saying somebody who is able to control his tongue, who is able to control his speech, who is not praising something or despising something, whatever comes under our way, he is situated in transcendence. And actually our speech, somebody said, our words are more powerful than a sword. Is that true? A sword can hurt one time. So you may get one wound and it can get filled also. But our words put a permanent scar. once Akbar asked Birbal, what is the most powerful thing? So Akbar was thinking, maybe he'll tell, oh, you are the most powerful. Your army or your strength is most powerful. So Birbal said, your words are the most powerful. Somebody's words are most powerful. Akbar said, how come words are most powerful? I don't accept that answer. I don't believe in that. So Birbal thought, okay, I will prove it to you. So once Birbal told Akbar, I would like to invite your daughter for dinner. So he invited. So she came and Birbal served a nice dinner. And she was eating. She was done eating after some time. And Birbal is saying, eat more, eat more. He is forcing her, eat more, eat more. So she said, no, I don't want to eat more. So Birbal told her something in a little rude tone. Khale khale tere khasam ka kya jata hai? So Birbal told something in a little taunting words and she got so upset. And she said, she came back angry mood and she told Akbar, I won't get this Birbal killed. He insulted me. And Akbar called Birbal, what happened? So Birbal said, I wanted to prove to you, the words are more powerful than the sword. So I just told her something rude word and she is so upset she wants to kill me. So the words are more powerful than any external thing. That's why speech is very important. The way we speak in our different emotions. So when husband wife fight, a lot of time it happens. So somebody said something and then the counterattack goes on. Isn't it? So looking at everybody's face, I think everybody is testifying. So somebody, let's say if husband said something, then wife will say double than that, then husband will say triple than that, and it goes on. So if somebody is situated in a perfect consciousness, what is the situation? Okay, even if somebody said something, we don't know what is his mindset right now. Maybe he really doesn't mean it, it just came out. Right? So just giving a benefit of doubt, just ignore it. So when can we do that? When can we ignore? When we are situated in right consciousness, right intelligence. So that's what Krishna is saying. If somebody is situated in right consciousness, who is not affected by this different emotions or different situations, even if something bad comes, doesn't get affected, something good comes, doesn't get affected, who stays neutral. That is Asthita Pragya, situated in transcendence. So that is about speech. The next one, so next two verses, Krishna gives the answer in briefly to the next two questions. How does he sit and how does he walk? So how does he sit means how does he restrain his senses? And how does he walk means how does he engage his senses?
Yada samharte chayam kurmo agnivasar sarvashah indriyani indriya bhesyastya pragya tasya pragya pratishthitah.
One who is able to withdraw his senses from sense object as the tortoise draw its limbs within the shell is firmly fixed in perfect consciousness. So Krishna understands Arjuna's real motive of understanding, what real question is. So real question is how he restrains his senses. And Krishna explains it with an analogy here. So what is the analogy given? As a tortoise withdraw its limbs. The same way a person who can withdraw its senses from sense objects, he is perfectly situated in transcendence. So now, general situation, what a materialist do? When there is an opportunity to engage in sense enjoyment, when there is a sense object in front of you, what we do? We welcome that. Right? Even if a thought comes for sense enjoyment, A materialist will welcome that thought. Yes, yes, I was waiting for you. Yes, let's enjoy. But a spiritualist person, a transcendentalist, even if a thought come to enjoy, he will ignore that thought. Oh, this is nonsense thought. I don't want to engage in this. So withdrawing the senses from sense object rather than engaging, even if there is an opportunity to engage in that. So that's why it says practicing devotional life in a forest is maybe easy, but practicing devotional life staying at home is difficult. Because see, it's easy to restrain when there is no opportunity, right? When you are in such a place or such a situation where you don't have anything, you are automatically restrained. So on a Ekadashi day, if you are in such a place where there is nothing to eat, by default you did Ekadashi. Right? But observing the fast, staying in a situation where you have abundant to eat, in front of you, you have various temptations. So to giving up those temptations and to be able to do fasting in that situation, it's more difficult. And if a person is able to control the senses, when there is opportunity to enjoy, that is situated in transcendence. A wonderful example of a great personality, Bhisham Pitama. What was Bhisham Pitama's greatness? What was his vow? Vow of celibacy. He took a vow, I will not marry, I will not have any children. And when he took this vow, the demigods showered flowers on him that time. And the sound started coming, Bhishma, Bhishma. Why? Because this vow is so terrible, strong. What is so great about this vow? There are so many brahmacharis in the forest, sages living in the forest, who took this vow of celibacy. So nobody showered flowers on them. Why they are showering flowers on Bhishma when he took this strong vow? So, a brahmana following the vow of celibacy, staying in a hermitage, in a forest area, it's very easy. But somebody, kshatriya, staying in a palace where all these opulences are there, where this all nice food stuff is there, and to maintain that vow in that situation is so difficult. So somebody is maintaining that in such situations, that is the greatness. So that's what Krishna is saying. When there is opportunity to enjoy, Bhishma had all the opportunities. Right? So many beautiful, beautiful women are there, all these. He goes to different kingdoms and all these queens and princesses are there. And then nice food stuff to eat. So your food stuff also determines our consciousness. So eating kandamool, it's very easy to stay in a mode of goodness. But eating all the passionate food, right? Staying in a palace, eating all gulab jamun, rasgulla, rasmalai and all that. And then having the consciousness of transcendence, of Shuddha Sattva, it's very difficult. So, giving up the object of senses, to withdraw our senses, as the tortoise withdraw its limbs, that is the characteristic of a transcendentalist, how he restrains his senses. So there is an extreme situation. There is a transcendentalist who completely restrains its senses. There is a materialist who, a small opportunity of sense enjoyment, who will try to engage in that. And as a sadhaka, where do we fall? As a practicing devotee, we are not at a perfection stage. We may be a little better than maybe materialist, trying to do something. So where does the sadhaka fall? So sometime we say no. Sometime we say, okay, wait. At the right time, maybe I will do. And sometimes we may completely give up if the temptation is so strong. Right? It depends on the level of the sadhaka. Does it happen? Sometimes when the opportunity to enjoy is, sometimes you say, okay, wait, I will do it maybe at later time. Right? Right now, let me finish this. So what, where we need to transition? We need to transition from that stage to the perfect transcendence stage, where we can avoid the temptation completely, rather than giving in to the temptation. And sometimes we may have control for a small period of time, for few days, few weeks, maybe few months, as in practice we may avoid something to engage in certain activity. But later on, what happened? We think, oh, I have got mastery on this thing now. I don't get affected by that. And we expose ourselves to those kind of sense objects. Isn't it? For example, if you have a lion lying down in front of you there, what will you do? Will you go touch the lion and see if that lion is sleeping or dead? Will you do that? Because then we are putting ourselves in danger. Right? So same way, this sense objects or these tendency to enjoy certain things, if we are ignoring that for a certain period of time, so those desires may die down by themselves if we don't engage in that for a longer period of time. But if we go ourselves and poke onto that, let me see if I get affected by this anymore or not. So we are kind of exposing ourselves to the lion, because the desires are so strong. If we try to expose ourselves with that or play with that fire, we are playing with the fire. We can get entangled again completely. So it's better to stay away, let those wrong tendencies die down by itself in sleep, when we are not engaging in those activities. And how does one engage his senses? Next verse Krishna answers. Vishaya vinivartante
niraharasya
dehina
rasavarjam
rasopiyasya
param drishtva
nivartate. Though the embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, the taste for sense objects remain. But seizing such engagement by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. So, this is exactly the analogy I gave. Even if we are restricting from sense object, the taste for that remains. Right? Those things may come back and bombard us. Because those emotions, those feelings are stored in the mind. Mind is a storehouse of all those previous thoughts and actions what we have done. So, if we are restricting from something, the taste for those things remain. But seizing such engagement by experiencing a higher taste, such a person is fixed in transcendence. So now, not just restricting the senses, but engaging senses in a better activity. Because just restriction will not help. How long can we restrict? If somebody is having a fidgeting problem, right? They cannot stay by doing something. Their hands are khujli ho rahi hai haath mein. Kuch toh karna hai. So how long they can restrain? Ultimately, they will end up doing something. So what Krishna is saying, just restraining will not help. So restraining is good, but ultimately you have to engage in a better activity, in a higher, to get a better taste, higher taste. Then it becomes easy to completely avoid those things, those abominable activities. So here the word used is ahar. What do you mean by ahar? Ahar is generally the food, right? What do you eat? So is ahar food only for the stomach? So stomach has its particular food, or the tongue has its particular food. So same way, all the senses has its particular food. So food for the eyes is watching something. Food for the ears is to hear something. Food for the hands is to touch something, do something. So all the senses have their own food. And to not giving the food what the senses want, but engage the senses in a higher activity. Give the higher taste to the senses. If somebody want to watch something, avoid watching all those nonsense things. Watch the form of the Lord, the activities of the Lord, something related to the Lord. Somebody has a tendency to hear something, some music, rather than listening to some mundane music, listen to Kirtan. My wonderful pastimes of Krishna. So engaging the senses in a higher activity, in a better activity, we get a better taste. So when we have a better taste, then we can stay away from the lower activities. But otherwise, it's very hard to restrain the senses. Because the taste remains. Even if somebody may restrain for some time. But as soon as something is reminded to us, you see something, you get reminded about something you did in the past years or months. And then all those feelings start coming back. So in the college times, oh, I used to do this, that. In my early years, I used to roam to various different places. So all these thoughts start coming. So generally what happens? We watch a movie. In the movie, there is a hero, heroine having some nice dancing around in the mountains or something. So all those feelings start coming to the person who is watching that also. So think, so everybody is basically thinks themselves as a hero in that situation when they're watching that. They think, oh, I am there and I am enjoying that way. Right? So immediately somebody starts imagining himself doing all those things. Because the taste for those things, even if somebody restricted for some time, the taste remains. The classical example of Vishwamitra. So what was in Vishwamitra's situation? He is restraining the senses from all these activities. So earlier Vishwamitra was a king. But then he got some problem with Vashishta and he took a vow. I will also do austerities, tapasya, and got some powers, mystic powers. So he started doing austerities. And when somebody is doing severe austerities, somehow Indra doesn't like it. Indra thinks he wants to take my asana. So Indra sends his damsels, apsaras. So when the apsara, when Menaka came to Vishwamitra, Vishwamitra is in meditation. He is closing his eyes and doing some austerities. Menaka comes and start dancing. And just hearing the sound of ankle bells, the sound of her bangles, Vishwamitra is reminded of all his previous activities because he used to enjoy. He was a king. He has many damsels. He used to watch all this dances and all in his court. So all these thoughts started coming back. And his whole his austerity was waste, gone. So if we don't engage our senses in a higher purpose, just restraining does not help. That's why to engage the senses, the classical example again is given of which devotee? Ambarish Maharaj. So in the scriptures, in Prabhupada's purports, he gives this, quotes this example very often. Example of Maharaj Ambarish. So Ambarish Maharaj, he was a great king. Practically that time he was the emperor of the whole world. But he was a great devotee. And he engaged all his senses in service of Krishna. So from, he will go walk to the temple of Krishna. He will watch the deities of Krishna. He will dress the deities of Krishna. He will serve the devotees. He will smell the flowers offered to Krishna. He will taste the foodstuff offered to Krishna. So in that way, he perfectly engaged all his senses in service of Krishna. So when we engage the senses in a higher purpose, when we get a higher taste, then it becomes very easy to give up the lower tendencies. But otherwise, it's not possible. So this is what Krishna is answering Arjuna's question. How somebody engages his senses to get the higher taste. Now in our situation, how we can apply practically in our life.
So chanting. By chanting we can purify the mind. And when we are chanting, we engage all our senses. So your hearing is engaged, your sense of speech is engaged, your touch is engaged if we chant on the beads, your mind is engaged, right? Rather than letting the mind wander on various thoughts, focus the mind on hearing the sound vibration. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So when we are chanting, we are engaging various senses. Then, rather than eating anything and everything, if we restrict ourselves to eating only Krishna Prasad, so it's not that, okay, you are fasting completely, don't eat anything. No, eat whatever you want, but make it to offer it to Krishna and then take that as Prasad. So you are eating whatever regular things you are eating, your dal, roti, rice, sabji, all various things you are eating. But prepare it for Krishna and then eat as Krishna's prasad. And music, as I said, hearing. So engaging our sense of hearing in hearing Krishna's kirtan. And Krishna's various pastimes. The lectures on Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. So if we can engage ourselves in these activities, slowly, slowly, gradually we develop a higher taste. Any comment, question on this? Some comment, some question. So, chanting. So chanting is very, very important. That is the beginning activity. Chanting and then eating Krishna Prasad. Right? As a ABCD also, the basic activities. Staying in the association, because in association we keep getting the inspiration. If we are out of association for some time, again those temptations start coming. So staying in association, reading the books, because in through books we get the knowledge. So reading the books or hearing, so this is engaging our senses. And then chanting the holy names and then taking Krishna Prasad. So C for chanting, D for diet. So ABCD, if we implement this ABCD, as I say, as take this vitamin ABCD. These are like four vitamins. So if we can take these four vitamins on a regular basis, our spiritual life will be avoided or not inflicted with any sort of disease. Otherwise, the disease to the spiritual life comes in terms of all these temptations. So as we need to maintain our physical health, same way we need to maintain the spiritual health. And spiritual health can be maintained by these basic activities. So if anybody has any question, comment, otherwise we'll stop here and continue from here onwards next time.
When would be the next time?
Next
year.
Probably has some question?
Yeah. So attachment we talk about. So earlier was forest was there. See that senses of this and talking about that. So पहले हम जंगल में चले गए. आपके पास में घर में तो सब कुछ है. तो sense objects आप you will get attracted, right? अभी तो जंगल भी नहीं है. अभी आप you are not in that situation. So it's, how do we get rid of that attachment?
So you are saying while staying among all these various things, how to stay away from attachment? Nice question. So as I said, staying within all these things and thinking this is all because of Krishna's mercy. Okay, when we focus our attention on Krishna and when we think everything is given to me by Krishna as a caretaker, rather than becoming the proprietor of that. So there is a doership mentality, there is a proprietorship mentality, right? So we generally start thinking ourselves to be the proprietor. Oh, I own this thing, I control this thing, and we try to enjoy that. So rather than having the tendency of the controller, the proprietor, the enjoyer, thinking Krishna to be the proprietor, Krishna to be the enjoyer, and Krishna to be the controller, then we can stay away from these attachments. Okay, this is given to me by Krishna as a caretaker. Let me take care of this on behalf of Krishna. So this house is Krishna's house. It's not that I become completely ignorant also, neglect everything. Oh, I am not attached to this house. I don't care how this house is kept neat or clean or not. So that should also not be happen. We should think this is Krishna's house. So I have to maintain it for Krishna. Right? Okay, this is Krishna. This family is given to me by Krishna. So this spouse, these kids, they are Krishna's. And I have to take care of them. I'm the caretaker. So in a bank, a cashier is there. So a cashier may deal with thousands and lakhs of rupees or dollars every day. So people come, they deposit, people come, they take away, withdraw. So does the cashier start crying at the end of the day, oh, so many people took so much money out from here? So cashier, he is just the caretaker. He is appointed at that position. This money does not belong to him actually. If somebody deposits or somebody withdraws, he is not concerned. So same way, we are the caretaker. So Krishna is giving and Krishna may take away also. So in that situation, if we develop that consciousness, that is how we can develop this free from attachment, free from fear. Nice question. Thank you, bro. So I'm speaking, but I need to practice too. Right? It's not that I am kind of attained perfection in all that. So this is as a, by speaking, we learn also.
I mean, you mentioned the example of Arjuna, right? So he got like first-hand Bhagavad Gita instruction, but then like when Abhimanyu happened, like he kind of like he got bundled by emotions. Like
right.
So it's not so easy. Right,
so actually, it's not that we don't become emotional. It's natural to have emotions. But how we act under those emotions, that is important. So it's not that, okay, if somebody dies in the family, I should not pay any attention to that. Emotions are natural. But how we react in that situation to that emotion, that is important. So let's say if somebody dies in a family at a young age, in Arjuna's case, Abhimanyu died at a very young age. So for a father, it's a very disturbing situation. So for a small period, maybe all those emotions will bombard. But if we have the real knowledge, transcendental knowledge, then we can compose ourselves with that knowledge. But if somebody does not have that knowledge, he will be completely broken. Right? So sometimes if some death is there in a family, somebody gets completely bewildered. Why that happened? Right? Why Krishna took or why God took?
You talked about chance Darwin, right? So that
right.
It kind of reminds me of that.
I mean, in our day-to-day life also, we see so many of such cases. Even if somebody have some knowledge, they get completely bewildered in certain situations. But with the knowledge, slowly, slowly, we get composed. We get kind of free from this bewilderment. So as another example is when Arjuna, after they won the war, they established. So after some time, Arjuna went to meet Krishna in Dwarka. So by that time, Krishna has winded up his Leela. So they had departed. Krishna has departed his abode. And Arjuna, when he reached there, he did not find Krishna and everything is kind of destroyed. He is completely bewildered in that situation. He is feeling separation from Krishna. But then he started remembering Krishna's words, Krishna's instructions, this message of Bhagavad Gita, what Krishna spoke to Arjuna. So with that, he started composing himself. He started feeling some relaxation from all this miserable situation. So this is the point exactly I'm trying to say. So if we have the knowledge, then even in a miserable situation, for a small period of time, momentarily that may attack us. But with knowledge, we can compose ourselves. But otherwise, we will be completely bewildered. Any other questions, comments? ओके सो थैंक यू वेरी मच. श्रीमद् भगवद गीता की जय. श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय. सो नेक्स्ट वीक आई एम लिविंग.